Stu Does America.
Welcome to the program. My last week on Glenn Beck Radio, and I will be updating what is next on this program here tomorrow on radio, and we'll post stuff on the YouTube page as well. By the way, 100,000 subscribers on YouTube, zooming past that number. Thanks so much for joining us. Please go and subscribe. I will let you know what's going on with the show, what's coming next, and everything else on tomorrow, at least as much as I can. Tomorrow, it will be posting it on YouTube. We'll also be on the radio show as well. I'll try to put clips of the radio show up, too. Dan Andros is here to reminisce on some of the good old days. He was actually there kind of at the beginning of the Glenn Beck Radio family. We'll talk about that. Tim Walz has finally said something that I agree with and approve of fully, without a doubt. Stay tuned to find out what. This is real, and he's on the money with this one, and I totally support him. But we're going to start by doing the vicious vinegar assault of Ilhan Omar. Now, we should let you know right off the bat that the person who has been charged with this now, he is the attacker, the vicious vinegar attacker. DOJ files federal charges against man accused of attacking Representative Ilhan Omar. Let me just show you the clip if you haven't seen it again. Probably for the last couple of days you may have, but it's short. It's Omar speaking, and then this guy rushes her lectern.
Or face impeachment.
Okay, so he rushes up there. He says something about you are dividing Minnesotans or something. It's kind of hard to pick up exactly what he's saying, but that's what he says. Now, I will say this, and I said this initially. I said this on this show, on radio, and even privately. When I saw that happen, it really is a worrisome moment. I'm not like, I'm sort of mocking this as a vinegar assault, but we didn't know at the time it was a vinegar assault. And the truth is, anytime that someone in public, a person in public eyes, particularly someone divisive politically, has someone rush them or get close to them to do something, it's always a dangerous moment. And I don't want to demean that. Like, first of all, obviously not that you would ever would, but don't do this. If you know anyone who wants to do it, tell them it's a terrible idea. Of course, all the disclaimers apply. Everybody knows this, but I'll mention it anyway. That is a real thing, and it could have been actually really bad. Glenn mentioned that in some, a lot of, Middle Eastern countries in particular, they have problems from time to time with people who accuse women of terrible things and squirt acid in their face, right? Like, things like this actually do happen. So, you know, you don't know right off the bat. I know there's a lot of speculation about whether Ilhan Omar, set this up or was looking for sympathy. I don't know. I don't have any evidence of that. She, sort of does act kind of interestingly and weird in that moment, maybe a little bit different than most people would. But that doesn't mean that we have evidence of that. When we have evidence of that, we'll happy to bring it to you, but we just don't know that yet. So I'm throwing that out the window. I know that's a big part of speculation on this, but I don't think it's necessarily something we can talk about yet because we just don't know. We don't know anything about it. Now, we do know the New York Times was all over this. They reported on it, and in the moment, it's worth a big story, right? Top of the New York Times for a while. What's going on? What is this liquid? Once you find out it's vinegar, the story's not really a story anymore, right? Like, once we know that what she did, yes, it's possible the colors could fade. If vinegar hits a shirt in a particular way, maybe the sweater, not usable even after that moment. But once we know that it was just vinegar, it's just a scary moment and it's over, okay? Now, that did not stop the New York Times from keeping this story at the top of the New York Times, top story all day long yesterday, all day long. Attack on Ilhan Omar follows years of Trump targeting her. That's the headline. Now, what did Donald Trump have to do with this story? Do we have any evidence that he was tied to this in some way? Again, he said something like, oh, you're dividing Minnesotans. That's all we have. Attack on Omar follows years of Trump's targeting her. This is how the story starts. Foreigners coming to the United States, President Trump told his audience in Iowa, have to show that they can love our country. They have to be proud, not like Ilhan Omar. The crowd booed. They recognized the name of the Democratic Congresswoman from Minnesota. Oh, great. Whom the president has demonized and dehumanized for years with racist and xenophobic attacks, venting that she should go back to her country, referring to her as garbage and mocking her hijab by calling it a little turban. And then they tie this. This is the next paragraph, not long afterward. At her own event in North Minneapolis, Mrs. Omar was attacked by a man who rushed to the lectern where she was speaking, spraying her with a strong-smelling liquid. Important to note that when this story gets up and is on the New York Times all day, we know what the strong-smelling liquid was. It was vinegar. That is a strong-smelling liquid. You can describe it fairly as a strong-smelling liquid. But when you say strong-smelling liquid, it could be anything. It could be a poison. It could be acid. Instead, it's vinegar, so nothing was happening here. But they wanted to make the drama as high as possible, so they never add the addendum of what the liquid actually is. Now, we have the person who was arrested after spraying Ilhan Omar with apple cider vinegar. That's the actual thing, apple cider vinegar. Now, I don't know. I watched that video, and the view that we just saw kind of shows it a little bit. The man looks completely insane. Okay, I don't know what he's saying. Saying something about dividing Minnesotans. He doesn't have a clear political view that we know of any at all. Maybe he's some big Trump supporter. We might. I mean, people were pointing out that his kids didn't seem to be. They were very liberal and, you know, had all these. But that doesn't mean anything. You know, we saw in the Charlie Kirk case, right? Like, you know, the parents were conservative. Kid was very liberal. Could be the same case here. We don't know. But he did look insane to me. And honestly, in my opinion, he looked like he was on something pretty serious. Like, he looked like he was on drugs or something. That he was walking strangely. He was making weird faces. He looked like, you know, the type of person, honestly, when I'm in New York City and I'm walking around and there's some crazy homeless person saying crazy things, that's what he looked like to me. That's just my opinion. The scene, which unfolded as Ms. Omar was calling for the resignation of Kristi Noem, the Homeland Security Secretary of Security, was carried out. Mr. Trump's immigration crackdown was shocking, but hardly surprising. So this is Trump's comments in Minneapolis or in another part of the country were somehow transferred to this other guy, even though they were happening very close in time. There's no evidence at all that he supports Trump. There's no evidence at all even that he heard the speech. It's very unlikely. But they're tying these events together by just kind of saying, doing the trick that I always love with the media, which is, at the same time, blah, blah, blah. It's like thing A happened while thing B happened. Well, were they tied? We're not saying that. We're just saying they happened at the same time. You can just, of course, tie them in your own head. We'd love that. But we're not going to say that out loud. And I will say what's interesting is they're saying Trump being highly critical of Ilhan Omar causes these things. They're very much trying to send that signal to you. Well, they don't send the signal up is at the time she's getting sprayed, she's criticizing in almost as harsh terms. I mean, Trump has a certain way with words, I would argue. But, you know, in the same harsh tone is Kristi Noem, who's she's accusing of running a Gestapo organization in her state and arresting people for no reason and murdering civilians. She's accusing Kristi Noem of terrible, terrible things. If someone goes after Kristi Noem, is Ilhan Omar responsible? Will we get this same treatment? I highly doubt it. Story goes on. But by the way, I should point out, this is a news story. This is not a column. This is not news analysis even, which where they kind of like, it's not, we're not saying it's news. It's analysis of the news. This is a just normal journalist reporting from Washington story written by a New York Times journalist. All right. By the way, we have some issues with technical stuff today, so I've got my laptop out. I hope you don't mind me reading from it. Ms. Omar is something of a special case, a Somali-born Muslim woman elected to Congress in an era defined by Mr. Trump's bigoted attacks against immigrants. Who defined it that way? Who defined the era that way? This era is defined by brutal, racist, xenophobic attacks against immigrants. Who says that? Whose opinion is that? It's not a news report. It's just they've decided that's how this era is defined and just stick it into a news story. Ms. Omar in the past, let's see. Okay, let's move on to the next one. Ms. Omar has sometimes been assigned 24-hour security detail from the Capitol Police. That added protection is available at the discretion of the House Speaker, but for the past year, Johnson, the Speaker, has not offered it to her. And that's supposed to make you feel, you know, really bad for Ilhan Omar for having vinegar on her shirt. Now, look, again, I selfishly want Ilhan Omar protected by whatever security she needs. Now, I want that because she's also a person and I care about other people and I don't want anything bad to happen to her. But I also selfishly, as a conservative, don't want some nut job, whether conservative or not, to try to do something to Ilhan Omar, because no matter who does it, we're going to get blamed for it. I don't want it to happen, number one. Number two, don't want to get blamed for it. I have nothing to do with it. I don't encourage it. I don't want anyone doing that to anyone, even if I can't stand their policies like I can't stand Ilhan Omar's policies. Now, Ms. I love this. They just built her up as a superstar. Ms. Omar knew there was a possibility of violence erupting when she walked into her town hall on Tuesday night, prepared to address a community on edge after the killing of Alex Preti by federal immigration agents. And when she was attacked, I don't know if it's a news story or a romance novel written about Ilhan Omar. I don't know if it was a superhero movie like Marvel was looking for another plot. But listen to this description, again, from a news story in the New York Times. When she was attacked, Ms. Omar reacted with defiance. She did not cower behind the lectern. She instinctively lunged at the man who was attacking her and insisted on finishing her remarks, even as her security detail and staff tried to persuade her to retreat. She did not cancel other events for the week. She held a news conference at the Carmel Mall in Minneapolis on Wednesday. In short, Ms. Omar barely flinched. I am built that way, said Ms. Omar calmly as she left the community room at the Urban League Twin Cities. Do you believe this? I mean, look, again, was it a scary moment for her at the time? Sure. I'm sure it was. I mean, it probably was. She probably does get death threats. This is real. I mean, I will tell you, anybody in the public eye these days gets them. She probably is getting them relatively often. And that's sad and should not occur. But they just made it sound like she freaking climbed down all 100 floors of the World Trade Center with three people on her back and somehow got out just as the building collapsed. She got vinegar on her shirt. That's literally the story here. I understand maybe it looked like it was more serious at one point. The actual story here is a woman got two little squirts of vinegar on her shirt. That's the beginning and the end of the story. They make it sound like she was friggin' saving children from a terrorist plot. It's bizarre. Her reaction to the incident underscored Ms. Omar's identity as a feisty fighter whose grit in the face of years of attacks portraying her as a dangerous political saboteur has only appeared to embolden Mr. Trump. He has raged against her, using violent language of the sort that can motivate extremists and provoke assaults such as the one that unfolded on Tuesday. What a paragraph. And I want to hit this one specifically because they're not saying, of course, that this person was inspired by Donald Trump, because they have no evidence whatsoever that that occurred. Now, we do have tons of evidence of people who tried to assassinate the president of the United States that they were heavily influenced by that same sort of rhetoric that they're describing, except coming from the left and probably from the New York Times directly. But that is nothing. We don't even get news stories acknowledging that that's a problem. When every single story in the New York Times is mentioning that the Department of Justice and the DHS are a bunch of Gestapo agents and SS agents, that's fine. That doesn't cause any violence toward them. They shouldn't be worried at all about people driving over them in Minneapolis after hearing this. They shouldn't be worried at all when Alex Preti is kicking their taillights out. They should just know that everything's going to be fine. How could they possibly be so angry and mean? But when it's Ilhan Omar getting vinegar on her shirt, everyone's losing their mind. Again, the top story at the New York Times for an entire day. Her response was so stoic. Who's defining it that way? You. She looked like a maniac after it. And I can kind of understand that. She went running after him, raised her fist as if she's going to beat up this big giant guy. And the fact that she wanted to go on with her speech I get that, like, that I will say, like, a security person would probably be like, hey, we don't know what's on your shirt. Let's get out of there. You can hear people saying this to her. She's just not that worried about it. It doesn't seem that dangerous, and she goes on with her life. She also probably smelled what she recognized as an adult human being as vinegar. Her response was so stoic that her political adversaries online used it to back up their conspiracy theory that the attack had been staged, a charge that Mr. Trump, of course, quickly leveled. Ms. Omar had herself sprayed, knowing her, he told ABC News, but it was difficult to see the attack as unrelated to Mr. Trump's years of insults and slurs that for years have placed a target on Ms. Omar's back. Why is it difficult for you to see it that way? Why is it difficult for you to separate those things when you have no evidence that one clicked into the other? Why did you have a problem with that? I don't understand it. It's because you're just making it up. It's because it's your opinion seeping into what is supposed to be news coverage. After assault on Ilhan Omar, Trump responds with another blame the victim conspiracy theory. And they go through a lot of this. Let's have her respond to the conspiracy theory here briefly.
He told ABC News after, just a few hours after this happened, she probably had herself sprayed, knowing her. Before you respond, I do want to remind everyone that when President Trump was nearly assassinated, you responded and said, we must condemn acts of violence and pray for the victims, make calmness and decency prevail. And you said it was sad to hear the tragedy that had occurred. What went through your mind when you heard the president's response last night?
Well, the difference between the president and I is that I was raised to be a decent human being, and my faith teaches me to have compassion. And he lacks both of those things.
Stop this. I can't take it. You've been calling this guy a fascist this entire time. You've been calling him basically a murderer. You don't get to say how nice you are. Okay, you've been saying horrible things about the president and so many other people. Look, does Donald Trump just run his mouth? Yeah, we all know that. We're all very aware of that. Would I prefer, for him to say things like that about the conspiracy theory? That, you know, who knows what the truth behind that is? I have no evidence at this point that supports it. I mean, like, people are like, oh, well, she looks up right before it. Yeah, I don't know. You know, we'll see. I guess on that one, I don't know. The bottom line is, should Donald Trump be throwing that out there? Man, I'm probably not. He doesn't say it's confirmed. He's just like, knowing her. And he's just being, you know, he doesn't like Ilhan Omar. He's kind of going to be a jerk to Ilhan Omar. We all understand that. For someone who's so faith-based and so deeply involved in controlling herself and being a wonderful person, she says a lot of off-kilter things. By the way, things she's had to publicly apologize for. Things she was almost censored by her own party. I mean, gosh, I hope she doesn't. I don't know. Her faith seems to support hating Jews, so I don't know. That part of it might just work in her brain somehow. But she said all sorts of terrible things about all sorts of groups. Let me go back to the New York Times here for a second. After the attack on Tuesday, one more thing on this. Sorry, let me hit this one more thing, because I don't know. We got too much stuff here, and I don't know that I'm going to be able to get to all of it. I will say this: after the attack on Trump. Yes, it's true. She released a tweet that said, hey, political violence is bad. This is what normal politicians do. And I will say, it is one of the things that does separate Donald Trump from other people. He usually doesn't really bother with those formalities. And that's what that was, that tweet from Ilhan Omar, a formality. She doesn't care if Donald Trump, gets someone attacking him. She doesn't care. She didn't care. She has been absolutely part of the reason why the rhetoric has built up to a place where you might expect something like that to happen. She is not at all responsible for an attack like that. That's not how this works. The people who commit the attacks are the people who are responsible for it. But she has done everything that the New York Times is accusing Trump of in here. Ilhan Omar is as guilty or more guilty than Donald Trump is. You know, and the fact that she put out one quick tweet afterward and then went back to calling him a fascist a couple of days later is no excuse and does not make me feel any bit better about her role in our society, which is not positive. You know, there is all sorts of fraud in the community she oversees. She knows a lot of the people involved in the fraud. There are tons of allegations that say that she actually committed it. Is that true? We don't know. We know that Democrats were investigating her over it. That just came out. So we'll see. We'll see how that goes from here on out. But I don't think she's a positive influence. I think she's been terrible. I think she's been anti-Semitic. I think she's done all sorts of things that have been awful for our society and has helped stir up crazy people on the left to do the things that they're doing. That is all real. She has no place to stand when complaining about such things. It is absolutely pathetic that she does so. And then she gets this treatment from all places, the New York Times. I don't know. You know, it's one of those things. Should I be surprised? No. Am I surprised? Sometimes I am surprised by how bad the coverage can be. But at the end of the day, this is why The Blaze exists. It's why Gled Beck exists. It's why Studios America exists. Because, you know, honestly, like, I don't know, we'd have a job if they weren't so terrible at what they're doing. If they just told the truth, you wouldn't need us. But apparently, we're still needed, at least at this point. All right, I want to talk to Dan Andros. He's going to be joining me about Glenn Beck. And, it's interesting. He's been there kind of from the beginning of the radio show as it started. We'll talk to him about that next. Most of us move through the day on autopilot, you know, coffee to start and whether, when we remember, maybe a little bit of water here and there, maybe something quick in between. Then the evening comes and for the first time all day, you maybe actually slow down. That's wonderful. That's when a cup of tea can be just the thing that you need. I mean, at least something that helps you reset. Kindred Harvest makes a tea that is really like meant for that kind of moment. Their blends aren't about, you know, all the kind of flashy claims and wellness, you know, stuff that you hear online. They're about giving your body something simple, something clean, something steady to work with. What stands out right away is how recognizable everything is. They got whole tea leaves, they got herbs, they got roots, they got flowers. They look like the thing that they are because they are the thing that they are. This is just, they just do this very, very basic and simple, and that's what they wanted to do. Then there's nothing powdered. There's nothing, disguised beyond like some weird artificial flavor. The same attention that carries through the entire process for Kindred Harvest, you know, go through these blends that are carefully balanced, they're minimally processed, and even tea bags that are plant-based instead of plastic. So what ends up in your tea is exactly what you want to be there. Tea. That's it. Stop trusting China with your family's health. Choose American quality. Choose Kindred Harvest. They are cultivating goodness daily. Go to kindredharvest.co. Use the code STU for 20% off right now. KindredHarvest.co. The promo code is STU. I'm joined now by Dan Andros, managing editor, CBN News, host of CBN's Quick Start podcast, which you can subscribe to wherever you get your podcasts. But more importantly, a man who was there almost from the very beginning. Dan, welcome back to the program.
Oh, thanks for having me, STU.
I remember Dan a long time ago. I was working, I started in radio as a promotions guy, hanging balloons. Talked to a guy named Glenn Beck at a Toyota car dealership gig. Yes. He was doing, which, and I mean this sincerely, literally zero people showed up to. It was me, him, and the employees. There was no fans, none came. So that gave us a long time to kind of talk and He asked me what I wanted to do, and I was telling him, that I actually like really like talk radio, which is weird for, you know, I don't know, I was 20 at the time, maybe. So that was a little bit weird, and we kind of wound up talking about that. He was talking about how he wanted to go into talk radio. And I did the show with him. We kind of built it up a little bit, and, back, it was I guess it was 1999.
The Journey?
We did The Journey. We did three shows, actually. The Journey. There was one that was kind of just like Glenn Beck, and there was one that was called The Impeachment of Character. It was his Bill Clinton, Monica Lewinsky-based show.
Yes.
So we did all that. You, at the time, were working in Richmond, I believe.
Yes, at WRVA.
WRVA, one of our affiliates for the radio show. And we, as we were getting, the show was sort of building up, Glenn decided he kind of wanted to shop it around a little bit, got some attention from, some, you know, national radio people, and they wanted to bring the show to a bigger market. There's a few that we had to choose from. Glenn, chose Tampa, 970 WFLA, fantastic radio station. And we kind of got to this point where, you know, like what were we going to do? I had some stuff at back in Connecticut. They want to, you know, giving me the morning show job that Glenn was doing when he left. And it was my home. It was our hometown station. We used to listen to KC101 all the time back in the day. So I was also very early on in my relationship with who's my now wife, and I didn't really want to just depart in the middle of that. So I wound up taking that job, and Glenn went to Florida by himself. And one of the big things he said to me when he was leaving, he was like, now what am I going to do? Like, we built this whole thing, and I don't have anybody good to come down and be producer. Who's going to be? I was like, I got a guy. Dan Andros on WRVA, he's a great guy, and you actually wound up starting that show in Tampa with Glenn.
Yeah, and you know, it was fun, and it was a good time, but you obviously at that time were better at that job than me, so eventually you came back down to get it going even more, but yeah, it was a crazy start at that time. I mean, first of all, Glenn, just the shenanigans. It's kind of funny how it all comes full circle, because we did, you and I, of course, growing up together, we listened to two things, Imus and then Glenn Beck. Like, those were the Glenn Beck morning show on KC101. Like, we were probably the only two people our age in high school and then college age that listened to talk radio and AM talk radio. But a lot of people listened to Glenn on that show. So it was kind of weird for all that to come full circle.
Yeah, I remember it was Glenn and Pat when we were young. I remember, you know, listening to Glenn and Pat on, it was like, you know, the station was like the big station in our area. So everyone kind of listened to Glenn and Pat. It's funny because we would, you know, put cassettes in, you know, cassette recorders and like call Knicks games and, you know, just make up stupid shows when we were kids. That was kind of like basically Dan and I's entire childhood. When you got down there, like, take us through some of those really early days, because this is before Glenn really knew who he was on the air. He didn't know what the show was really going to be. He was trying all sorts of crazy stuff.
Yeah, we were figuring stuff out. And then the station also, and then Glenn was just, I still remember Glenn the first day he cracks the mic and he goes, you know, in typical Glenn, like, dramatic fashion, he's like, I think I've just made the biggest mistake of my life.
First show on the air.
First show, cracks it open. And that's what he does. And like, we would do all these different bits and monologues and things. And like, it was just off the rails. I mean, it was just Glenn, just like every idea that you could possibly imagine. And a lot of it was great. But I mean, I remember he would want to do bits we were talking about some story that was going on. He's like, let's do a Corky on that. And I was like, I'm sorry, what? It's like, you know, a Corky from Life Goes On. I do a good Corky. And I was like, oh my gosh. I'm like, what is going on here? But, bits like that.
bits like the quirky bit.
Mm-hmm. We did a live abortion on the air one time. Like, he threatened that he was going to air this abortion live, and ended up the big gag.
Built it up. He built this up for like 2 weeks, right? Like, it was
a long time. I don't remember, but yeah.
And he was making the typical Glenn passioned sort of pro-life argument of like, how you need to know what this is. You can't just sit back and think of this as a political issue. You have to understand and feel it. And I might just play it. And he kept building it up over weeks and weeks and weeks and weeks. And then there was the big reveal day, and everyone's tuned in. I mean, people are going nuts over this, and people were talking about it all over the country at the time. What actually happened?
Well, I got in trouble for this. I think I almost got fired for this, but we weren't going to air obviously an abortion. So the bit was, we would play like a clip from like a bad radio show or like a bad moment from a radio show, something like that.
An abortion of a radio show, essentially.
Right. Like, and we'd play the clip, and Jeffy was there. He was in on this one, and so Jeffy's playing the clip, and you know, Glenn's like, I'm telling you to play. You know, people are calling in going, no, Glenn, the abortion didn't play. It was just a clip of a radio show. And Jeffy's like, no, I played the abortion. We played it live on air. So, like, you know, we were obviously just calling it that. But the clip was, and so the debate internally was, well, what do we do? Because we don't want to play like from an outside station. So we ended up making the terrible decision to play a clip from a show inside our cluster of stations. Nothing wrong they were doing, but it's just a format we found funny, right? And so played a clip from it, And yeah, got in big trouble for that.
So basically, and, you were saying the work your coworkers were doing was an abortion, is
yes,
what you were doing.
Correct. Correct. So there, needless to say, that show was not happy about that. So
I bet
these were the sorts of bumps in the road we hit on the way.
Yeah, it really was. It was
on the way up. Yeah.
It was crazy because I don't understand how you get in trouble for that. It was obviously Glenn's idea. Why is that?
Well, yeah, they said, I mean, there was a whole lot of scaredy pants behind the scenes, but basically I had to take the fall for it. People were saying they told me not to do it and I did it anyway. As the, you know, executive producer at the time, like they said that I overruled authorities that were telling me not to do it, and which.
And then
I dispute those claims, but I took the fall like a good soldier.
Glenn hanging you out to dry like he always does.
Well, it wasn't Glenn. I'll just say that.
Like he always does. You then went to you did other work at the radio station there, 970 WFLA. And then you wound up coming back to the Blaze. I remember loving this. You know, we've been friends forever, and you know, been hanging out and talking on the phone all the time, and you know, screwing around doing stuff like this forever. And always wanted to, you know, kind of do something together. You wound up coming back to the Blaze. And was it right? Was it a TV show that brought you back? I can't even remember now. No, it was before that.
It was before that. I mean, basically, once you came down to Florida, we were both kind of still at 970 doing things. And then when Glenn went up to Philly, you were up there for a bit, and then I came up.
That's
you
right.
Guys went up before me for a few months or whatever it was, and then I went up. So that was the really fun time when it was in Philadelphia. It was you, me, Glenn, and you know, then eventually Sarah, but a couple phone screeners in between there, and then. You know, it was just us in that building just doing crazy shows and crazy bits.
It really was a wild time. That was like when the show became national. It was around the Iraq War time. We went through all that. It was a crazy journey. And you were here for what, maybe a decade, more than a decade? How long were you here for?
Yeah, I think that was probably like 02 or 03, something of that nature. And then, up until 2016.
Think about some of the things that you remember most about that time. I mean, I was thinking about, for example, I don't know, gathering 500,000 people in Washington, D.C. I mean, I remember when Glenn came up with that idea. It's like, oh, we're going to have a rally. And I'm like, it's such a big area. It's going to look so tiny. And then it kind of turned out a little differently than that.
It did. And I remember just at that time when the show got really big, you know, it went from just a couple of us there in the studio to all of a sudden we had this big team. Glenn's on Fox News and, you know, the president's talking, Obama's talking about Glenn all the time. It was just an insane time being like right in the middle of all of that. That was definitely unusual at that time. I mean, I feel like now it's a different landscape. You know, people are way more media savvy and, you know, as far as politicians, and they're always going on shows and talking. It wasn't like that 20 years ago or 15, 20 years ago. And so swirling in the middle of all that, you know, Glenn with the red phone and coming up with all that stuff behind the scenes was just, it was just super intense and fun and, you know, a crazy time.
Yeah. If you remember the red phone from the Fox days, Glenn said, basically, look, if I'm getting any of this stuff wrong on Obama, you know, let me know. I've told them they can call me, but I've actually installed a new phone. It's right here. It was sitting on the desk and it was a red phone. And he was like, anytime I get something wrong, you call me, go ahead. I'm always ready for you right in the middle of the show, whenever you want. And so he made this big deal about it. And, you know, of course, they were in contact with people at Fox and they were really intense about that. But they weren't going to call the actual phone. I mean, we never expected them to. But it was a real phone with a real number. So at one point, Glenn is doing a monologue on Fox News, and he's just like, he picks up the phone, he's waving it around. He's like, they're never going to call me. And he goes like this, and he puts it down, and we go to commercial. And it's, you know, dead silent in the studio. We're trying to prepare for the next thing. And then the phone rings. And we're like...
Dead silent. You hear a pin drop. Everyone's looking like, what?
Oh my gosh. What's going on? They're actually calling. The only people who had this number was the White House. Like, that was it. And Glenn picks it up and he's like, hello? And it's a guy. He's a listener, he's a viewer of the show. And he's like, hey, Glenn, just so you know, I was watching the show. And when you were like waving your arms around, you showed us the bottom of the phone. And there's a sticker on the bottom of the phone with the actual number on it. So I just wanted to let you know, you just kind of gave it out to everybody in America. I mean, first of all, relief. because I don't think we really wanted to get a call from Barack Obama. But it was one of the craziest moments. I mean, there were so many of them, but I just remember that being like, my heart just dropped.
Jim in Iowa calling in. That's that crazy moment. But he wasn't crazy, but it was crazy. But do you remember there were so many shows. Remember the guy with the tickle? Who was the guy that, you know, we had on? That was the most uncomfortable hour of television. I remember we were all preparing for that. The guy that's saying he was having the tickle parties. He was saying he was having the tickle parties, and Glenn was grilling him on that, and it just got worse and worse. Like his explanations of it. Who was that guy?
I don't remember who it was, but it was a story. I think it was like one. It was, you know, in a way, almost like a Me Too type story, if I remember right. Yeah. Like there was people accusing him of like uncomfortable touching, and he was like, "Oh, I just like to tickle people or something." And for whatever
tickle parties,
tickle parties. Whatever dumb reason, he decided to actually come on and answer Glenn's questions. And I don't remember. I mean, Glenn just was like, didn't buy it at all. And it was just this incredibly awkward, awful thing. That was another one. And I remember, too, one of his friends, an economist on the air, passing out. Remember, he was in the middle of on live television, just kind of like keeled over. He was, I don't know, some, you know, just lost it for a minute. He was okay. Yeah. But that was a really scary moment as well. I mean, so many things happened over these years, Dan, and it's been weird going through the last week of radio here and talking to Glenn about all these old memories. And it's like, I don't know. Like, I have no experience as an adult not doing that radio show.
Yeah.
It's my entire life.
It's going to be weird. And it is weird for me to go back down memory lane. And I just think about all like remember the Super Bowl halftime shows we used to do?
Oh my God.
And then, you know, all the Wilford in Sun City, Florida. Rewinding back to the Florida days, the Schlub Club, you know, we would pit the audience and get, you know, we'd create a fake topic in the 3 o'clock hour. And then in the 4 o'clock hour, all the people that were in the 3 o'clock hour then started calling in and pretending that they really believed some crazy opinion. So all the people who just tuned in at 4 o'clock were like, what are all these people? and so, you know, it was just stuff like that. It was so much fun. Oh. But planning all that stuff, you, me, Glenn, behind the scenes was just an absolute blast. And it's crazy that we got to do that for so long.
I know. I don't know how they allowed us to stay on the air this long. And the fact that they're letting it continue is even more mesmerizing. Yeah. We were talking earlier this week about, more on trivia, of course, was a big one. That was hilarious.
Yes.
But also the Valentine's Day extravaganza we would do every
year.
Yes,
that was one I wanted to bring up. My goodness. That's one I actually feel mildly bad about now in retrospect, but it was so funny. Can we talk about, you're going to remember this, but you know, for those of you who don't know it, Glenn had this whole form letter that I think Stu created, and it was just really funny. And then, you know, people who on the day after Valentine's Day, if they forgot and they blew it, Glenn would sort of bail them out with this, hey, you won a contest. He wrote in, and I'm sorry. It was my bad. We didn't get to the winners, but he's our winner. You guys are our couple of the year, and then the wives would always be just so elated about this. But but we'd be cracking up behind the scenes reading through the form letter while Glenn was reading the form letter. Mm. But there was something wrong with the phone system at the one studio we were doing it at, that there was some bleed through. So one of the guys got busted because Stu and I are in the back laughing so hard on the other side of the glass that it just bled through, and she could hear the laughter on the phone, and he got busted from that. I think that's the only time somebody got busted on that. And I was, you know, look, it just hit me. I was like, this is pretty bad.
Look, did we screw up some marriages? Probably. But I believe we saved more than we screwed up. I think most of the people probably didn't know, especially early on, because I do always wonder, did people go back and go, oh, I want to listen to that segment. And once the internet started, and then that would have been bad, because as the audience, you're just hearing the same form letter over and over and over again, as if it's really intense and personal.
Yeah. And it was really bad too. It wasn't romantic at all. It'd be like, Jim is so busy at his job at, you know, changing tires at Tire Plus. You know.
We always made them put in awkward work details for no reason. There's so much we could keep talking about on this. I felt like we had to go down memory lane a little bit. Dan Andros, managing editor of CBN News, and one of the original founders of the radio show with all of us. CBN's Quick Start podcast right now. You can head over and subscribe today. Dan, awesome to talk to you about all this, and we'll catch up later.
All right, Stu.
The left-wing media is going nuts, and they're echoing a claim from Candace Owens. And you know how much the left has always adored Candace Owens and everything that she says. But when it serves their purposes, they will apparently go down this road. Candace Owens exposes Erica Kirk's private call boasting about increase in Turning Point USA sales days after husband Charlie's assassination. You know, this is so bizarre how people are trying to dissect how she's grieving. Did she smile within a month of this terrible thing? I'm sure she did. You know, I think that's how everyone has to deal with these things. I don't think it's all, I haven't seen anything that seems all that odd, honestly, about this. I will say this, like this, this week, actually, I had a, I mentioned her on the show the other day, my aunt who was struggling. She had, you know, has been fighting with cancer for a very long time. And passed away a couple days ago. And like, you know, she's my aunt, but like, you know, super, super close. And like, you know, kind of like a third grandparent to my kid. I saw her, spent every Thanksgiving with her basically since the day I was born. And like, it was literally soul crushing. I can't even describe it, how upset I am. I heard about it when I was here. And you know, I just blubbering in the hallway on the way, like it's just a disaster. But like, here I am. You know, joking about old radio segments all week. And, you know, it's been really hard to do, honestly. Like, I don't want to laugh and I don't have anything good to feel right now about any of that stuff. But like, this is what you do as a human, right? You come in and you compartmentalize it and you just push it all down to the ground and you try to think of something else and you try to push yourself through a really difficult moment. Like, that's, I'm sure, what she was doing. So I don't even understand why this is a story. And it's disappointing that the left is just, you know, they're, again, it's the same thing I said in the monologue. They're pathetic. And I think when I come to sad moments and have rough moments in my life, I want to make sure I'm getting some good news in. And there is some good news today. And something that I never thought, you know, I'm not a Tim Walz guy. I never thought I would ever really agree with him or cheer him on in a particular statement. That's not what I thought. I don't know what's happening to me, but I'm feeling things that I've never felt before. I totally agree, and I cheer Tim Walz on when he says, Tim Walz says he'll never seek elected office again. You know, there's a warmth that comes inside, you know, when something like this happens. And, you know, I totally agree, Tim. And honestly, to help you, to even further what you're saying, you should never, ever seek office again. And, you know, why go on TV again? In fact, why not resign right now so we never have to hear from you again? That really is going to solve your problem even more than this new promise. So, Tim, we're on your side. All right, join us tomorrow on radio. And by the way, I think it's going to be kind of everywhere tomorrow. And it's my last day on radio. I think it's going to be on, like, you know, Twitter and Facebook and YouTube and everything. You can watch the whole show. We'll be going through a lot of kind of memories from the days. I think Pat Gray is going to join us. I don't know, you know, what else is going to be going on. I'm sure it's going to be amazing. I'm going to have a tough time getting through it, frankly. But I will also be discussing what I'm going to be doing next, kind of the new projects that are around the corner. I think you'll be interested in those. Just so you know, I'll be back here on Studios America next week. We have new shows coming up for you. So that's going to be continuing for a while for sure. You know, after the radio show ends, we're going to have a special sort of after show on YouTube as well, which will give you kind of a chance to ask any questions that you want to ask, anything that's left out there that you want to discuss. It's been 28 years on the show, and it's going to be really tough to get through that last one. It really is. But it's been a great time, and it's been great meeting so many of you over the years. So we will see you back here on Monday and tomorrow on radio.